This is episode 9 of Gone from Glendale. Alicia Navarro is found alive in Montana. I was writing the script for a very different final episode to this season when I got the news that Alicia Navarro, now 18 years old, has been found alive and safe in a small Montana town called Haver, which is 40 miles south of the Canadian border. Haver is 1,300 miles directly north of Glendale. According to the Haver Police Department, Alicia walked into their station on Sunday morning, July 23rd, and identified herself as Alicia Navarro, the missing girl out of Glendale, Arizona. Alicia was alone, in seemingly good health, and asked to be removed from the missing persons registry. The Haver police released footage of Alicia wearing a denim skirt, a gray t-shirt with the word spooky on it, and black Chuck Taylor shoes. Her hair is long, black, and wavy. In the footage, viewers have suggested that Alicia seems out of it, possibly drugged or malnourished. It's really hard for me to say one way or the other. Since Alicia reappeared in Montana, there has understandably been a barrage of news coverage. Outlets have filled in the holes in the narrative with rumor and speculation. People have turned up at the home where Alicia was being held, and members of the public have even turned on Alicia and her mother, Jessica, somehow suggesting that they are to blame for what has happened here. I am really disappointed, but maybe not entirely surprised by the public response. People feel that they are owed answers. And trust me, you guys, I understand this. We don't know what to do with this turn of events. It should be a happy ending, but it's not the happy ending that people have visualized in their heads. But the truth is, you guys, there is no such thing as this fairy tale happy ending in a case like this. When a minor has been harbored for nearly 4 years, when they have been brainwashed into accepting their new life, it is going to be a messy process of getting that person's life back to any semblance of normalcy. And we need to have grace for what this person has been through. It is my personal belief, based on everything we've learned, that the man who took Alicia used coercive control to get her out of her home and keep her subdued, while systematically brainwashing her over the last 4 years. One thing that's been reported is that Alicia still has the same braces on that she had 4 years ago and that they have not been taken care of. I want to read something for you from the Women's Aid Organization website from the UK. And this is about coercive control, which I think plays a huge role in this case. This is from the website. Domestic abuse isn't always physical. Coercive control is an act, or a pattern of acts of assault, threats, humiliation, and intimidation, or other abuse that is used to harm, punish, or frighten the victim. This controlling behavior is designed to make a person dependent by isolating them from support, exploiting them, depriving them of independence, and regulating their everyday behavior. Coercive control creates invisible chains and a sense of fear that pervades all elements of a victim's life. It works to limit their human rights by depriving them of their liberty and reducing their ability for action. Coercive control has been likened to being taken hostage. As one expert says, the victim becomes captive in an unreal world created by the abuser, entrapped in a world of confusion, contradiction, and fear. That doesn't mean that there aren't aspects of coercive control and this kind of abuse that don't involve loving acts, that don't involve love bombing, because that is a part of the coercive control. The man who has been holding Alicia was detained for questioning. He is described as a quiet, heavy-set man in his late 20s who keeps to himself, and at times posed as Alicia's uncle. Neighbors reportedly heard Alicia threatening to, quote, go back the day before she walked into the Haver police station and identified herself. Either way, it's important for us to remember that this is just the beginning of what will certainly be a lengthy investigation. There are a lot of aspects of this case that demand investigation. There are a lot of things we do not know and might not know ever or for a very long time. At least one person committed at least one very serious crime. By taking 14-year-old Alicia across state lines and harboring her for the last 4 years, while government agencies expended resources searching for her all over the world, and Alicia's family and friends were racked by the devastating loss and uncertainty that accompanies a child going missing. I suspect more than one person was criminally involved, and let's be clear, a crime was committed and not by Alicia. Alicia did not get to Haver and sustain her life there all on her own. Since the news broke publicly that Alicia has been found, I've briefly spoken with her mother, Jessica, Trent Steele, the PI who has been working on her case alongside the Anti-Predator Project, who you heard from in episode 2, and I've even talked to Clark Samples, who you heard from in episode 3, just to get their reactions to this news. And I think it's safe to say everyone is in a state of shock, but Alicia being found alive and allegedly safe is the best outcome we could have hoped for. I'm sure more information will come out in time, but for now, as hard as I know it is, we need to be patient. We need to reserve judgment. We need to have respect for Alicia and her family's privacy. The investigation is in law enforcement's hands, and the more thorough and impenetrable an investigation of the person who took and harbored Alicia, the more bulletproof a case against them will be in court. We really are not owed answers or information, and in fact, it could be really unsafe for Alicia for the public to continually demand answers during an open and ongoing investigation. We don't know the details of what Alicia has been through, and we may never know. Even though Alicia is now 18, she has a right to her privacy, and she now has her voice back. Let's let the justice system work, and maybe someday Alicia will be ready to share her story in her words and on her terms. You don't have to agree with me, but the goal of this podcast was always to find Alicia alive and safe, and I consider this a win. There is so much to be learned from Alicia's case, and some of these lessons may not be clear for several more years. I really hope that we do not take away from Alicia's case the idea that a runaway is ever just a runaway. A child runs from something, or they run to something, or some combination of the two. A 14-year-old doesn't run away and start a new life and thrive, and it's doing a major disservice to our kids to not have respect for the nuanced experience of kids like Alicia, to not understand what really happened here and how we can intervene to stop this from happening again in the future. I hope everyone listening will educate themselves on coercive control and the insidious nature of this form of abuse, because sadly, you guys, what happened to Alicia, it happens all the time. And as tired and well-worn as the expression now sounds, if I've learned anything in making this podcast, it's that you really can't give up hoping. And if you go missing, friend, I promise somebody out there, perhaps somebody you've never even met, no matter how pissed off you are, will never give up on looking for you too. And finally, this last part is a message to Alicia. I know it feels like you're the only one going through this, but you are not alone. Nothing that has happened is your fault. I am proud of you. You have an amazing life ahead of you, and it starts today.